This is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. On this segment of the program, we're going to be talking about how to cope with the IRS's collection of delinquent taxes. My guests are John McGregor, a certified specialist in tax law. He's a partner in the Fresno law firm of McCormick Barstow. My other guest is Dennis Bean, a certified public accountant, also a certified insolvency and restructuring advisor, and a principal in the Fresno CPA firm of Bean, Hunt, Harris, and Company. Funding for Your Legal Rights is made possible by the Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar of California, which certifies the following fields of law: taxation law, appellate law, bankruptcy law, criminal law, estate planning, trust and probate law, family law, franchise and distribution law, immigration and nationality law, workers' compensation law, legal malpractice law, and admiralty and maritime law. Additional funding is provided by the Family Law Section of the State Bar and the Lawyer Referral Service of the Bar Association of San Francisco. John and Dennis, are you there?
We are.
Oh, this is wonderful. This is wonderful. Great to do this. Both of my guests are obviously down in Fresno. And what I think we should start with is, what do we do if we can't pay our income taxes? Do we just try to hide, or how do we deal with this?
Yeah, very bad idea to just hide. And this is John McGregor. Chuck, it's great to be on your program. Thank you for having us.
Of course.
What happens is that if you can't pay your taxes, the most important thing to do is get a return in on time. So folks who haven't filed their income tax returns for 2011 should get them in if they haven't already, even if they owe taxes, unless they are properly extended. But, you know, what happens when the return is filed showing a delinquency due is that the IRS sends polite notices saying, we see that taxes are due and please pay them. But over about a 70-day period, there finally comes a 30-day notice of intent to take forcible collection. This is the so-called final notice and demand. These all come out of automated collection systems around the country that are run by computers. And there are folks there who man the phones, so to speak, and take inquiries from taxpayers. But if the tax cannot be paid, then the IRS has several weapons it can use. First of all, it can file a lien, which is a security claim against your property. This is automatic for liabilities over a certain size. But to show you the scale of the problem, in 2010, just about 1.1 million liens were filed around the country. And IRS can do this without any court action being required.
And that is a lien against real property, I presume.
Well, all property of any description.
I see. Okay.
So, for example, if I owed you some money and I knew that a lien were on file, and I paid you the money notwithstanding the existence of the lien, and the IRS found out that I did that, I would be required to pay the IRS.
So you got to be careful.
Yes, you do have to be careful. Another weapon is the levy, which is the seizure of liquid assets, and that's in the nature of a wage garnishment or bank attachment. The IRS can seize, for example, business property and sell it. Seize your car, sell that.
Without any court order. Is that right?
Without any court order. That's right.
The only thing that they have to do in that regard is they have to give prior notice of intent to take those actions before they take that action.
They can't do it. They can't do it by the stealth approach. Is that right?
Unless they figure out that the collection of the tax is in jeopardy, in which they have some special powers to be able to step in today and take something without that notice process.
For example, if the IRS found out you were leaving the country and owed a lot of tax or potentially owed a lot of tax, they could use what's called a termination assessment, but that's pretty rare.
What does that mean?
It just means that they can terminate your tax year and declare a tax to be owing.
I see.
And effectively, you make a deposit against the tax liability until the matter is resolved.
John, one of the things that I find the with regard to the levy, the action of stepping in and taking a bank account or a wage garnishment or something of that nature, is that these are somewhat extreme collection measures, and the service would prefer to have your attention and resolve these matters before they get to this stage. Because when they get to this stage, they sort of got your attention, because now they're into your back pocket, and they can affect your ability to pay your rent and other things. So these are pretty drastic measures, and they want your attention. You need to react to them and work out something. Just don't let it keep going on, because it'll keep going on.
Let me throw this one at you. It sounds like a number of persons or percentage of persons have not filed a tax return, and the IRS finds out about this and sends out the notices, etc. What if you, as a taxpayer, can't pay the taxes, but as you suggested, John, the thing to do is to prepare and file your tax return? How does that help you in terms of, let's say, you have a tax obligation of $15,000, $20,000, or whatever it may be? You put this on your tax return. You either prepared it yourself or had a tax professional help you. How does that help you in terms of the way the IRS will deal with you, or other than possibly avoiding some aspect of penalties because you filed the return? How does it help you otherwise, as far as the notices you're talking about?
Well, the important thing right off the bat is, you mentioned penalties. It's worth saying that the failure to file penalty is 5% per month of the tax liability on the tax return.
So you're talking maybe as much as 60% over a year's period.
Fortunately, it tops out at 25%.
I see. Okay, well, I'm glad to hear that.
Yes, but the failure to pay penalty is just 0.5% per month. So it is 6% a year. Another important thing about getting the return on file is it makes it so that the statute of limitation that the IRS has to collect delinquent taxes begins to tick away. And finally, it preserves certain defenses that the taxpayer has to forcible collection. In other words, it allows for certain tools such as entering into installment agreements or offers in compromise. Those defensive maneuvers are not available if the return has not been filed. So, Dennis, do you want to talk about installment agreements?
Well, let me talk about installment agreements from the starting point, because Chuck mentioned an illustration where somebody files a return and they don't have the ability to pay the tax in full at that point in time. One of the things that taxpayers can do is they can file a request with the return or separately to have an installment agreement for that tax liability. Now, I don't recall specifically if there's a limitation on those automatic requests for an installment agreements in terms of the amount that can be requested, or where the ceiling is at before you can't request one of those. But those simple little processes for, let me just say, the smaller tax due accounts are pretty simple processes to go through. And those are, anybody can do those. Those are pretty simple to use.
This is something you can do by going to the IRS website, is that correct?
Yes, and you can pick up the form and file it with the return, or if you're using a tax preparer, the tax preparer can attach that to the return, and you just sign it, and it goes with the return, or those can be also filed, I believe, standalone type forms.
What recommendations do you have? If someone is behind in their taxes of a number of thousands of dollars, what recommendations do you have that they should either do this themselves by going to the IRS website and trying to figure out how to do the forms, or actually try to get some help from a professional?
I think the issue there is a person's ability to understand the information that's on that IRS website and also the amount of tax that's involved. One of the problems that I see when I'm dealing with people is they come to me and they've got a tax notice that says they owe a bunch of money, and there's a guy getting ready to knock on the door and want to collect it. Now, the person who is trying to collect that tax has been given a file that says, this taxpayer owes some money. Go out and get it.
Is this an IRS agent?
Yeah.
Okay, all right.
Yeah, and his focus is getting rid of that tax account that's been assigned to him mm-hmm. by collecting the money and going on and getting another case and doing the same thing. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, many taxpayers that I deal with have current tax obligations that are going to rise next year when they file the return because they're using the money that they're earning today to pay old taxes, and they're not making proper estimated payments or having enough withholding so that next year when they file the 2012 return, it's going to be fully paid, and they're not going to be in this problem again. So oftentimes we have to redirect the attention and the priority of how the money is being used so that we can get out of this rut and get on to an effective payment plan, but make sure we're not going to be running up more of these liabilities, because those will default an installment agreement if we don't make estimates, and they'll default an often compromised or other payment arrangement you make. And so it's super important to get that back in focus and help that collection agent understand we're trying to solve the big problem, which is not just the old taxes.
Well, it sounds to me, in terms of you're talking about trying to get involved with an installment program, that frankly, in terms of the potential consequences, if you aren't able to follow through in making the payments, then you default on the installment program and you're back to ground, it sounds like nearly back to ground zero, where the IRS is knocking at your door again.
Yeah, that's exactly the problem. And, you know, you might get two strikes, but the third strike, they're not going to be as generous to you.
One of the ways that the Internal Revenue Service has been trying to deal with this issue is through something called the Streamlined Installment Agreement. It is something that can be done online, and it plays to individuals who have unpaid liabilities of $50,000 or less. And what they can do is they can go online, enter into a direct debit agreement where the money is taken directly out of their bank account. The payment horizon is 6 years, 72 months. What you can also do is pay your liability down to $50,000 so you can qualify for this program. But if you qualify, then forcible action by the IRS stops and, in fact, is prohibited for so long as that installment agreement remains in place. There's a small user fee that is paid, but what it allows is for the taxpayer to get off the squirrel cage, so to speak, and sort of consolidate these liabilities and pay them over a six-year period. It allows people to get back on their feet again. And there's very little paperwork involved. But as Dennis says, there are folks out there who need help from their professionals to set up those programs online.
My understanding was, and correct me if I'm wrong on this, John and Dennis, is that if you go for one of these streamlined installment programs, do you not have to provide to the IRS financial statements? And if so, do you not also have to give full disclosure under penalty of perjury?
Yeah, the answer to that question is it depends on the amount, because if the threshold for an installment agreement without having to supply the IRS with financial information has been raised to the $50,000 from $25,000.
Uh-huh.
So that's a pretty big savings in terms of time and effort and disclosure of financial information. Above $50,000, you're going to have to supply financial information. And as you pointed out, it's going to be a comprehensive statement, and you're probably going to have to sign it under penalty of perjury. So you're going to be opening up the keys to the castle and giving them to the IRS or the tax agency in case you default. Then they know where to go to start collecting. They know where the assets
are. So you've given them, you've opened up all of your secrets. That's
absolutely
what you're saying. Yeah. Let me let the listeners know that this is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. We're talking about how to cope with the IRS's collection of delinquent taxes. For those of you who are listening to us live, we are live in the Bay Area. We're live on the internet at www.kalw.org. And in the second half hour of the live program, I will invite you to call in with your questions, your comments in the tax area, if you would like. My guests are John McGregor. He's a certified specialist in taxation law, a partner in the Fresno law firm of McCormick Barstow. Dennis Bean is my other guest. He's a CPA, also a designation that I had never heard of until I actually met Dennis by way of the internet, It's a CIRA, Certified Insolvency and Restructuring Advisor, and he's a principal in the Fresno CPA firm of Bean, Hunt, Harris & Company. And by the way, I want to let all of you know that if in the event you are interested in contacting the Board of Legal Specialization to get a free pamphlet in any one of the 11 specialties or want to find out who your certified specialist may be in your area of the state of California, you can either call the statewide number 415-538-2100, 415-538-2100, or go to the Board of Legal Specialization's website, www.californiaspecialist.org. Specialist is singular, californiaspecialist.org. Okay, let me do this, if you don't mind, and please, since this half hour is going very quickly, I noticed that in the information you provided to me, John, you're talking about people being very careful about tax debt mills. And I'm wondering what is your concern there and what should their concern be?
Well, one of the first things that seems to happen when an IRS lien is filed is that people start to get phone calls from all over the country from people who offer for a fee, of course, paid up front to resolve their tax problems. Some of these folks do not have your best interest in mind. Now, remember, everybody works by the same tax rules across the country. There's no special rule out there. There's no special magic that anybody has. So your local folks are likely to know as much or more than some of these anonymous phone callers. But the idea is you pay money to them and to solve your tax problems, and that is followed by a request for more money. And if you pay that money, then it's a request for even more money. So what happens is these are just scams. This is a problem nationally. In California, we have had the California Attorney General come in and shut down a practitioner named Ronnie Deutsch. The Texas Attorney General just shut down a mill called Tax Masters and obtained a $193 million judgment against that outfit. So the important thing is if you don't know what your rights are, contact somebody local and reputable.
When you say somebody local and reputable, I would assume that you would include a certified specialist in taxation or a certified public accountant. Would you or would you not?
Yes, those would be the first people I'd be thinking of, but also enrolled agents could
yes.
be helpful. They are people who used to work for the Internal Revenue Service and have passed the competency exam.
How do you find an enrolled agent, John?
There is a website for enrolled agents.
Oh, is there? Okay.
Yes.
So you can Google them.
Yes.
I presume. All right. One of the, you know, I believe you told me before we went on the air that this action by the Texas Attorney General against this tax masters in Texas and a judgment, did you say, of $180
million? $193
million. Pardon me, $193 million. But that outfit actually also, in the course of the case, filed bankruptcy.
Yes, on the first day of trial, the Taxmasters organization filed for bankruptcy, and apparently the Texas Attorney General proceeded rather quickly to get a judgment from the court, and now is trying to collect the judgment through the bankruptcy process. Where that will lead, I don't know, but yeah. A lot of folks are out a lot of money. I just talked with someone the other day who had paid $20,000 to Taxmasters to get some major problems resolved, and nothing ever happened. As a matter of fact, time deadlines came and went, and nothing happened. So it really is a sad story.
Let me ask you this. With regard to persons who may have significant tax debt, what comments do you have about them looking into as a potential alternative of filing for bankruptcy? Individuals now.
Chuck, the under the bankruptcy law, there is a regime where certain types of taxes, if properly aged and all of the stars line up, they can be discharged in bankruptcy.
Mm-hmm.
And it is a tool that is available. It isn't available to everyone, and it doesn't get rid of all kinds of taxes. But there is that opportunity under some circumstances to get a discharge of tax obligations. And a lot of people use that. I suggest that it works best as a tool when you have a lot of other debt issues that you need to deal with. And I was mentioning earlier, I think, when we first started talking, that I was talking with some folks today about a tax problem. They had a very short fuse on it, and I discovered that there was other tax problems that didn't have a short fuse that were quite old and a lot of credit card debt.
Mm-hmm.
And it just made more sense to maybe have these people talk with a bankruptcy attorney than it would be for me to pick apart the old taxes or the current taxes and still leave that credit card debt sitting out there. I think the bigger picture of resolving these financial picture problems for the whole family come into play, and I think that's part of what a person should be looking at when they think about bankruptcy. What can I do to get the most benefit out of this problem, including getting rid of some of these tax obligations?
Some persons, though, who have not had experience in dealing with this are very wary of going into bankruptcy because they believe that it is something that will, should they be discharged in bankruptcy, will haunt them as far as their credit rating, et cetera, et cetera. Do you have any comments about this, generally speaking?
Yeah, you know, credit rating issues are going to be there, and they probably already have credit rating problems by the time they come to see me or go to see a bankruptcy attorney and somebody talks to them about filing bankruptcy. That's just a fact of life, and
mm-hmm.
they can rebuild their credit if they work at it diligently. And at the same time, bankruptcy is a tool that our federal government has given us to put our feet back on the ground and get that fresh start. Again, it doesn't work for everybody. There's a lot of emotional baggage that goes with it that is very hard for a lot of people to swallow. But it is a tool, and it is one tool specifically that can be used to deal with taxes, either through an installment agreement of some sort, through reorganization or Chapter 13 plan, or through a liquidation in a Chapter 7 in a bankruptcy process.
One of the things that Dennis has taught me over the years is that it makes a lot more sense to pay taxes with cash rather than with a credit card. And the reason is that credit card debt in the context of a bankruptcy is not dischargeable. But taxes can be dischargeable if they're properly aged. So that's a very important consideration in planning for any taxpayer with significant delinquencies.
John, let me clarify that. What you're really saying here is that if somebody pays their taxes with a credit card, that those taxes, that credit card bill, will probably not be dischargeable, as opposed to, say, the other charges on the credit card for gas and Starbucks coffee or whatever it is, but the tax portion of that would probably not be dischargeable under the new regime.
That must have come from the credit card lobby to do that, I presume, huh?
That I believe came in the 2005 Bankruptcy Reform Act.
I see.
And that was probably a payback to somebody somehow in the process.
In the remaining minute or so of our statewide program, and we will, as I mentioned a few minutes ago, continue live in the Bay Area and continue live on www.klw.org on the Internet. Any significant websites that you would suggest listeners might go to if they want to try to educate themselves more?
Yeah, the IRS has got a darn good website that has information on tax collection issues. There's a Q&A section in there. There's forms. There's brochures. One other thing that's available under the tax professional toolbar on that window is called the Internal Revenue Manual. And this is the internal manual that the government uses, that the agents use in the Internal Revenue Service, to give them guidance on what they should be doing and handling on tax collection cases. And it's Chapter 5 of the Internal Revenue Manual. I find that to be very helpful.
Would the website be www.irs.gov, or what would it be?
That's the site.
Is that it? Okay, www.irs.gov. All right, we have come to the end of the statewide version of the program. We will continue live in the Bay Area, continue live on www.klw.org, the Internet. This is Your Legal Rights. I'd like to give you, if you have a question about taxes, a problem with taxes, if you have something you want to share that you think would be helpful not only to you but to others, please join us at 1-415-841-4134, 1-415-841-4134. My guests are John McGregor, a certified specialist in taxation law. He's a partner in the Fresno law firm of McCormick Barstow. My other guest is Dennis Bean, a certified public accountant. He's also a CIRA, which is a certified insolvency and restructuring advisor. He's a principal in the Fresno CPA firm of Bean, Hunt, Harris, and Company. Before we take any calls at this point, and I do urge those of you who may be having some difficulties with owing taxes, and that includes, perhaps you haven't filed a return, perhaps you have gotten an extension, where, and we didn't even discuss this yet, and I think we will in the second half hour, an extension where you have to file your return by mid-October. But you have to pay your taxes ahead of time if you don't want to have a problem. But we'll talk about that in just a minute. Let me mention to those of you who may be facing a foreclosure, the San Mateo County Law Library, as it does every month, has a presentation by experienced attorneys. And in this situation, on Thursday, May 10th, which is just a little bit more than a week from now, a week from tomorrow, it will have attorneys Ruben Nokos and Nahib Judaya talk about foreclosure, how it works, and what works out that may help save your home. And the San Mateo County Law Library, this will be Thursday, May 10th at noon. You can bring your sack lunch if you feel it's free. And the Law Library is located at 710 Hamilton Street in Redwood City. It's just across the street from the Hall of Justice in Redwood City. And if you'd like more information, you can call the number 650-363-4913, 363-4913. Let me come back to both of you. We didn't talk about those persons who, for whatever reason it may be, and it's not not because I don't think it shouldn't be because you can't pay your taxes on time, but correct me if I'm wrong on that, but one can obtain an extension. You have to file some paperwork. It's pretty simple. An extension to file the return until October. Could you talk just a little bit about that before we take a call?
John, you want to take that?
Sure, I'd be pleased to. There's an automatic extension of 6 months to pay income taxes and file a return. To file the return, not to pay the tax. What you need to do is file an extension request timely, and this would give you until October 15th. But in the meantime, the taxes must be paid. Otherwise, there could be a failure to pay penalty of 0.5% per month. There's an interesting new Fresh Start initiative that the IRS has announced for tax returns that are due this year for liabilities incurred for the 2011 year. And that Fresh Start initiative applies to folks who had been unemployed for 30 consecutive days in 2011 or in the period up to the return filing date, which this year was April 17th, or who had who are self-employed and had a reduction of 25% of their gross revenues. Those folks, if they owe less than $50,000 in tax, have until October 15th to pay all the tax. And if they do that, all of the failure to pay penalties are waived by the IRS, which means that you only pay the 3% interest on the delinquency. It's a terrific deal for those who are pinched by unusual circumstances in 2011.
Do you have to, in doing something like this, do you have to reveal a lot about your financial situation to qualify for this Fresh Start initiative or not?
You don't file any financial paperwork at all. There's a special form that the IRS has for this purpose, Form 1127A, and that's all it filed.
Well, that sounds like something that would be very worthwhile if someone is up against the wall, it would seem to me.
Yes. I compare it to, for example, paying taxes by credit card, as we mentioned a while ago.
Yes.
3% interest is a good deal less than any credit card interest you'll find.
Which is mostly nearly 20% now, I think, of at least what I've seen for many of the credit card companies.
Yes.
All right. So, why don't we do this? Let's take a call right now from Scott. Scott, welcome to Your Legal Rights. Are you there, Scott? Hello, Scott? All right. Scott has left us. Scott, if for some reason you got cut off, call again if you would. It's 1-415-841-4134. 1-415-841-4134. If you do call in and let's say you have to wait on the line a minute or two, please be patient and we will get to you. Before we take our next call, let me do this. If you have a legal problem, you may need to talk to a lawyer. The Bar Association of San Francisco's Lawyer Referral Service can arrange an appointment for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation. This is a public service of the Bar Association of San Francisco, and for a referral to a lawyer, call 415-989-1616. That's 415-989-1616. This information is brought to you by the Bar Association of San Francisco and KALW listeners like you. If you're in San Mateo County, the San Mateo County Bar Association also has a lawyer referral service. You can call your own at 650-369-4149, 650-369-4149. If you're in any other county in California, every county has a bar association and a lawyer referral service. You can call your own during normal business hours. Tell them what the problem is. They'll do their best to find someone experienced and set up a half an hour consultation for you. Depending on the county, the half hour could be a low of $25 or perhaps a high of $35. Pretty much throughout the state. So it's a good way to at least get some basic information in various areas. I'm not necessarily talking about tax areas because that takes some real expertise really. But in any event, I invite you again to call in 1-415-841-4134. 1-415-841-4134. And if you are listening to us on the internet live, that's the same number that you can call. And Martin, why don't you give me a number, a name of somebody, and we'll get somebody on the line here so that we can get going with listeners' calls so that they can get a chance to find out what's going on. By the way, for next week, I want you to know that this month, May, is Elder Abuse Awareness Month. We're going to be talking about prevention of elder abuse. My guests will be San Francisco Assistant District Attorney Cheryl Matthews, Elder Financial Abuse Unit. She's in that unit. Lieutenant Art Stellini of the San Francisco Police Department and Cindy Rasmussen of the San Francisco Adult Protective Services Office. She's the supervisor there, so you might find that interesting. I think it'll be an interesting program. It is a problem, certainly. Brian, welcome to Your Legal Rights. Brian, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Yeah, go ahead. You're on the air.
Okay, so I have a question. Say you have a situation where, you know, you didn't file taxes and you owe back taxes. You're in the process. The IRS needs you to, you know, to do that for all the past years so that you can actually come up with a total figure of what you owe. And say you owe, you know, a total figure of maybe, you know, $36,000, and you want to apply for the streamlined installment agreement that you mentioned earlier in the show. You know, that would, over 72 months, that would be maybe $500 a month for $36,000. Is there a possibility to negotiate a smaller, you know, an amount and then total amount that you come up with a IRS agent?
So in other words, you're trying to see if there is a way that the balance that you owe, $36,000, can be negotiated to a lower figure that would fit within the streamlined installment program. Is that what you're saying,
Brad? Yeah, something lower that would be make it more manageable to actually come up with, you know, to actually pay the total amount over an installment period.
And be successful. I think that's what you have in mind. Yeah. John and Dennis, what comments do you have for Brian?
Well, that's one of the – that question is a very common question. People come into our office all the time saying, you know, I want to do something with these people, but I need them to wipe out the penalties. I need them to reduce the interest or something. I need to get this number down. Unfortunately, the people that you're dealing with don't have the authority in most cases to make decisions to reduce your obligation. They just can't do that. And they're trying to treat everybody fairly across the country, and so they don't push that kind of authority down to most of the people that are in the collection.
Dennis, you as Brian make the request to whomever you're dealing with initially, can you as a taxpayer request, can you send this up the stream or the ladder, whatever we want to call it?
Isn't it called an offer in compromise?
Well, there are mechanisms, and he's hit on the point. The mechanism is the offer in compromise, which is a process that the government, and both this applies both to the state agencies and also the federal side of it, where there is authority there given to the organization to compromise liabilities when it's in the interest of the government to do so, and there's some fairness involved in the process. In order to get an offer in compromise, though, you've got to make full financial disclosure because the service is going to require that full disclosure to determine whether or not the amount that is being offered is a fair amount that they could otherwise collect if they were to sit there and just collect it over the collection statute. So it doesn't fit everybody for an offer in compromise. It's a rather expensive process to go through, and it takes roughly 10 to 12 months to get through that process.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But it is a tool where you can, in some instances, get a reduction in the total amount owing, but not the pieces to the puzzle. They won't compromise the interest. They won't compromise the penalties. They won't compromise the tax, but they'll compromise the obligation, the entire obligation. Works better if the obligation is higher than it is lower because of the cost factors in doing these offers.
Obviously, it sounds like to me, Dennis, if you were going to seriously consider trying to pursue an offer in compromise, that you would want to have a professional helping you, would you not?
Oh, I think you have to, because you're dealing with specialists at the service level and at the state level, whose job it is to review these things and get the water out of them and get down to what can we really collect from this person.
Brian, I don't think this has helped you much, but I hope it gives you something to go from here.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks very much for calling. Nat, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Hi. I have a question for you. I'm trying to not bury my head in the sand with this situation. It's a little intimidating. I took some bad tax advice, and I work as a private contractor. I unfortunately owe approximately $2,000 for back taxes from 2008 till now, which I'm paying in installments or in monthly payments.
You're talking about Nat. You're saying $2,000?
$2,000 for previous years.
Okay.
But this last year, 2011, I have accumulated about $11,000 in debt. I was not paying quarterly like I should have been, and now I'm in a bit of a quandary. I'm not really sure what to do about it. I did make a payment on the advisement of my tax person of $1,000 before December 15th. I have an extension, and I'm just waiting for my check that's coming in so I can pay some money towards that, towards my monthly installment for this year. I'm really just concerned with what I should be doing from this point forward. I'm scared that they're not gonna roll it over into what I already owe. I don't own anything. I don't own a house. I don't, own a car. There's not really anything they can take, but I really don't know what to do. I also have some credit card debt and some financial aid debt, and I'm wondering, based on the previous conversation, whether it would be smarter for me just to file bankruptcy.
How much do you owe altogether, Nat?
Altogether, I would say credit card debt I owe somewhere around 12, maybe less than that, probably about 10, and financial aid for student loans I owe about 20.
I think the problem with depending on the student loans, I think the problem under the bankruptcy law is those are not dischargeable.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah, I don't know when.
About bankruptcy until it was brought up on this broadcast. Figured I'd ask.
But I think you should ask. I mean, I'm not trying to give you legal advice on this, but I know there was a change in the law, the bankruptcy law, with regard to student loans. Unless there was a true hardship that one would have, depending on when the student loans were made, they can't be discharged in bankruptcy, but you certainly need to look into that. What thoughts, John and Dennis, do you have for Nat with regard to what he's saying here? And please understand, Nat, that my guests cannot give you specific legal advice because the State Bar's ethics rules don't permit them to do so, but I'm asking them to more generally respond to your questions and your concerns and try to give you some direction.
That's exactly what I'm looking for. Thank you.
Yeah, Matt, my suggestion would be, first of all, I think Chuck is probably correct on the student loan, so put that off to the side. I think that the bankruptcy process may resolve your credit card problem, but it's not going to resolve your tax problem.
Okay, that's my main concern. I'm not really concerned about the credit card issue. I'm more concerned about the tax issue.
So what I think your better plan of attack should be is making sure that the money you're earning this year is used to first pay the obligations you're going to incur for this year.
Gotcha.
Those estimated payments.
Show the IRS that I am making my estimated payments and I've figured out how to do it properly.
Absolutely. And let me give you a couple of hints there. It doesn't matter if you're overpaid on those estimates because they're going to keep the refund anyway.
Right.
And you're going to get credit for it.
Right.
So the more you pay, the better off you are in the long run. The second thing that I would add to that mix is, if need be, make monthly estimates to cut the bite down and,
right,
and smooth out the cash flow. You're required to do quarterlies, but at least smooth it out, because,
mm-hmm,
number one, if you're accumulating money in a bank account to make a quarterly payment, and let's just say you owed something to the franchise tax board and something to the IRS, one of them likely could step in and levy the bank account and empty it and put it on the old taxes, and now you can't pay the current year taxes.
Yeah. Exactly. Okay.
So smooth it out, smooth out the cash flow, and make those payments on a very regular basis as you earn your money.
Right, right. And that is what I am doing this year, and I unfortunately couldn't pay anything when I filed my extension, but in the next week or two here, I'm going to be receiving a paycheck or two that are going to go straight to the IRS for this year's taxes.
2012, because,
right,
if,
right,
because
so
when you
file, then I am on the right track.
Yeah, when you file your 2011, if you're not able to cover 12 and also pay down 11, then you can ask to put the 2011 in an installment agreement with the older taxes.
That's what I'm really hoping that they will do, and that's what my tax lady had said would most likely happen, as long as I paid at least $1,000 by December 15th towards my 2011 taxes, and then showed that I was on the right track, obviously got the point, and was making quarterly payments.
Yeah,
for this
you got to be back in on track.
Good.
Okay.
Good luck to you, Nat.
Okay, great. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much for calling. This is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. We're talking about how to cope with the IRS's collection of delinquent taxes. My guests are John McGregor, a certified specialist in tax law. My other guest is Dennis Bean, a certified public accountant and certified insolvency and restructuring advisor. Our number again, 1-415-841-4134, 1-415-841-4134. And John, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Hello, I'm on the air.
Go ahead, you're on the air.
Okay. I've heard that even if I don't owe any taxes, I'm supposed to file every year. What's the purpose of that? Makes unnecessary work for me and for the IRS.
So you're saying you're not making any money, but you still believe you need to file a tax return? Is that what you're saying?
That's what I've heard.
Okay. And when's the last time you filed a tax return, John?
Over 10 years ago.
Okay. And are you receiving money from any source whatsoever?
I just have a couple of small pensions.
You don't have Social Security?
I have Social Security and plus a private pension.
Plus a private pension, okay. So may I ask you this, generally speaking, in terms of the money that you receive per year from the Social Security, the private pension, etc., how much are we talking about per year?
About $1,200.
$1,200 per month or per year?
Per year. I mean, per month.
Per month. All right. $1,200 a month or something like $14,000 a year.
Yes.
Let me get some, John, and you are retired, I presume.
Yes.
Okay. Any questions for him, John, and Dennis, or can he take the answer on the air?
No.
I'm talking to my guests right now. John McGregor and Dennis Bean, any questions you have for him, or can he take your response on the air?
No questions for him.
Okay,
yeah,
no question.
I don't have any questions.
All right. John, the listener, would you hang up and take the answer on the air? Turn your radio back on, would you?
Well, I'd rather stay on the phone in case you have any questions.
All right. You just stay on the phone. Any comments from John McGregor and or Dennis Bean for him?
John, the situation you're faced with is you have to look at how much of your income is Social Security and how much is from other sources. The problem with the other sources, such as the annuities, is that they generally have a taxable portion associated with that, and maybe there's no withholding on it. Now, first of all, if there's withholding on it and you don't have a tax liability, you want to file a return to get that withholding back. So that's point number one. Point number two you need to look at the amount of that income and determine whether or not that non-Social Security income puts you in a situation where you're making enough of it that you have to file a return. And that threshold is approximately $9,000 or $10,000.
Yeah. Well, what happened was the first 3 or 4 years after I retired, I filled out the tax form, and I didn't know anything. So after a few years, I just stopped doing it and didn't send anything in. And I've never heard anything from IRS.
Well, it may be very likely that you don't owe anything and you don't have a filing requirement, but there is an income threshold that you have to look at to determine if you have a filing requirement. By the way, the Social Security income is not taxable until your aggregate income exceeds about $30,000.
So there you are, John. Now you can hang up, if you would, and listen to the balance of the program, because I want to talk about statutes of limitations for a couple of minutes here. John, thank you very much for calling. All right, here's a question that someone has called in. Can you enlarge on the question of statute of limitations? When does the clock start running, and when, if ever, that's a big if ever, does it stop?
I'll be glad to answer that or try to.
John McGregor.
The IRS has 10 years to collect the tax. And that 10 years runs from the date of assessment, which is basically the date on which the IRS gets your tax return and enters your liability in its rolls. And an IRS official signs off on that. And on that date, the clock begins to tick. But it doesn't necessarily tick straight through. For example, if you filed for bankruptcy, that would stop the running of the clock. If you entered into an installment agreement, it would stop the running of the clock. If you made an offer in compromise to settle the tax debt for less than what you admittedly owe, that will also stop the clock. So it may be that the IRS has more than 10 years. And occasionally the IRS will bring suit on large liabilities within a 10-year period, and that extends the time out even further. So anyway, the short answer is 10 years, but subject to a range of exceptions.
There's a lot of exceptions.
Yes.
Yes, unfortunately. Here's another one that I want to present to you. A caller called in. When I became unemployed and ran low on cash, I had to break out an IRA. How can I bargain for time paying fees I am being charged for, taking out the IRA too early, while still unemployed and short funds? Do you have any thoughts on that? Now, this is not a tax question. It's really an IRA question and a penalty and fees for taking it out early, I believe. Correct me if you think, John and Dennis, if you think I've misinterpreted that.
I think what you have is just what you described. You have somebody who took an IRA out, and they have a tax to pay on the IRA, plus they probably were under the threshold age or other requirements for avoiding a penalty on the IRA, so they probably got a tax and a penalty on that IRA. So the question then becomes, when I file my return and I can't pay the tax, what do I need to do with that tax and that penalty? And that is, you probably got to get into an installment agreement to pay that tax obligation.
And would that be what you referred to earlier, such as the streamlined installment program, or what, generally speaking?
Yes, it would probably be that. And mm-hmm. and the catch-22 here is that if you take more out, you're going to include more tax out,
yeah.
More distribution to pay the tax, you're going to incur more tax. So you don't want to invade the IRA any sooner than absolutely necessary.
Unfortunately, though, some persons, they've still got to live, you know, and if they're unemployed, that's a real problem. Well, I hope whoever called us in can benefit by the comments that you have made. We are getting close to the end of the full program, and I'm wondering if you have some, Dennis, I wonder if you have some final comments that you'd like to impose upon us, or not impose, but to present to us.
Well, the strong message that I really share with my clients is use today's income to pay today's taxes first. Concentrate on that obligation, and then to deal with the older taxes. Get the order of priority established so that you don't have this problem going forward, or you're just not going to get out of the rut, and you'll be seeing somebody again in another year. So just be prepared, and that's what I recommend to my people. That's just absolute requirement in what I practice.
Mm-hmm. And John McGregor, what comments do you have for closing up? We still have a minute or two left of the program.
Well, maybe just a couple of things, Chuck. One is that the state tax is usually less than the federal income tax. And, well, you know you're going to be delinquent on one of the taxes if you possibly can. Pay off the state first. There are some advantages to that. First of all, you only have to deal with the Internal Revenue Service. Second, if you're itemizing your taxes, itemizing your deductions, the state tax may be deductible. So that's one
May be deductible on your federal return.
May be deductible on the federal return.
Mm-hmm.
That's correct.
Okay.
Not the state return, but on the federal return.
Okay.
The other thing is dealing with the Internal Revenue Service. Debt collection folks who come to your door, if that is the case, you know, they've got a tough job to do. And they respond well to respect for their position and respect for the fact that they have a hard job to do. My clients who do the best are those who are very civil with these folks, who don't raise their voices, who recognize that they have a tough job to do. It is not unusual for the IRS debt collector to suggest ways that the taxpayer can make it easier for himself or herself. So the IRS debt collector can actually be a resource in some circumstances.
So try to maintain a cool. Is that what you're saying?
That's right. Try to be part of the solution as opposed to part of the problem.
We have come to the end of the program. I want to thank both of you very much for joining us. John McGregor, certified specialist in tax law, partner in the Fresno law firm of McCormick Barstow. Thanks, John, very much.
Thank you.
Nice to hear from you. And Dennis Bean, CPA, CIRA, and principal in the Fresno CPA firm of Bean, Hunt, Harris & Company. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Great to have you. Great to have you both on the program. Your Legal Rights production staff members are program engineer Joanne Marr and production assistant Martin McLean. Funding for Your Legal Rights is made possible by the Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar of California. Additional funding is provided by the Trusts and Estate section of the State Bar, the Labor and Employment Law section of the State Bar, the Lawyer Referral Service of the Bar Association of San Francisco, the California Applicants Attorneys Association, and the San Mateo County Bar Association. Next week, we're going to be talking about Elder Abuse Awareness Month, which, of course, is May. We're going to be talking about prevention also. My guests will be San Francisco Assistant District Attorney Cheryl Matthews of the Elder Financial Abuse Unit of the San Francisco DA's office, Lieutenant Art Stellini of the San Francisco Police Department, and Cindy Rasmussen, San Francisco Adult Protective Services Supervisor. So join us then. Thanks very much for joining us on Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney.